Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon. At the end of this podcast, we'll have a special report from Chelsea Wald for World Ocean Day. It's all about a fish library that's getting a high-tech makeover. But first, this week we have two stories about the relationships that animals have with each other. It turns out that some, like us, even know each other by name. Reporter Justin Warner has more.
You're listening to the dolphin equivalent of a name like Bob, Steve, or Jennifer. Or if it's a celebrity dolphin's baby, Apple, Suri, or Shiloh. This according to Vincent Yannick of the Sea Mammal Research Unit at the University of St. Andrews in Scotland. While studying bottlenose dolphins off the coast of Florida, he and his colleagues discovered that dolphins associate unique whistles like these with specific individuals. And it's not just the voice they're recognizing. Yannick's team proved this by reproducing the calls on computers with the whistler's unique vocal qualities stripped away.
We preserve the shape of the whistle if you look at it on a spectrographic display, or if you want to talk about it acoustically, we are preserving the changes in pitch over time, but we're removing everything else.
Yet the dolphins still recognize the name whistles, suggesting that, like our own names, the whistles have a universal shape that anyone can reproduce. In fact, the dolphins can essentially call each other by name.
So one context that we found, for example, that a dolphin can swim into a larger group and produce somebody else's signature whistle in that way, effectively calling out for that animal and addressing that animal. And that's something that certainly happens. But two dolphins will be together and then talk about a third one, so to speak, is something we don't know yet.
So the topics of dolphin gossip and name-dropping will have to wait for future research.
Thanks, Justin. Western scrub jays may not recognize each other by name, but they've had to learn to recognize each other by sight and keep tabs on each other. That's because burglary is rampant among them. They steal each other's food. Psychologist Nicola Clayton of Cambridge University in England says that if a scrub jay hides his food when another bird is watching, he'll go back later and check on it. If the coast is clear, he'll move the food once. If the same observer is still watching him, he'll move it several times to confuse the would-be thief. And if a new bird is there, he won't move it at all.
To do so, they must not only recognize different individuals, but they must remember who was watching at a particular time. So the idea is that they're sort of keeping an eye on the competition, if you like, and protecting their caches according to what their competitive spots have and haven't seen.
Which for a bird is a surprisingly sophisticated sort of paranoia. Next up, preparing for a flu pandemic takes more than stockpiling vaccines. Reporter Chelsea Wald tells us a big factor is keeping critical human resources on the job.
During a flu pandemic, the people you'd most want to report to work are healthcare workers, but a survey in Maryland found that nearly half of them wouldn't show.
I would say it was a little unsettling.
That's researcher Saad Omer from Johns Hopkins. He says his team found that technical and support staff would be the least likely to report to work, in part because they don't see their jobs as important.
The operators manning the phone lines are important because they're supposed to be at the front line of risk communication. People maintaining the IT infrastructure are important. So the bottom line is everyone working at the health department is important.
He says getting that across is a key part of being prepared for an outbreak.
Thanks, Chelsea. Well, Japanese researchers have discovered a new medical treatment that definitely won't help with the flu, but is effective for hay fever. Kissing. The team from Sato Hospital had 24 hay fever sufferers kiss for 30 minutes. They also had them try cuddling without kissing. The kissers showed a significant drop in their levels of immunoglobulin E, a blood chemical that stimulates histamines which cause itching and sneezing. Cuddlers showed no drop. Of course, the study was too small to be conclusive, so much more research is needed. Now we have a special report for World Ocean Day, which was June 8th. Reporter Chelsea Wall tells us about an interdisciplinary team of scientists working to put the world's fish on the net.
Just a few feet from the California coast, at the Scripps Institution of Oceanography in La Jolla, curator Phil Hastings oversees a vast collection of sea creatures from around the world.
And there's stacks, rows and rows of shells that have fishes in jars preserved in alcohol. And our goal with this preservation technique is to have them preserved basically forever so that future scientists can come and work on the specimens.
With some of his rarest fish, Hastings is in a bind. To learn about them, you have to dissect them. But once you dissect them, they're damaged and much harder for future scientists to study. InterUniversity of California, San Diego radiologist Larry Frank.
I'm at the UCSD Center for fMRI.
MRI, short for Magnetic Resonance Imaging, is of course a technology commonly known for imaging brain tumors and torn ligaments. But a few years ago, Frank happened to see a painstaking fish dissection presented at a seminar. Immediately, he realized MRI could do the same thing much faster and without destroying the fish.
Here is an image of a shark brain, and you can see that we've been able to separate all the different components, the olfactory lobes, the eyes, the optic nerves. And here is the same object from a dissected specimen. So you can see they're essentially the same. And this was done completely non-invasively.
So he and Hastings applied for and won a five-year, $2.5 million grant from the National Science Foundation to image a broad swath of fish from the collection and put the data online for anyone to analyze. The tricky part? Fish come in many strange and wonderful shapes, and Frank's team needs to develop special MRI machines to accommodate the more unusual ones.
We're starting with ones that fit into our existing coils. As we develop some of the other coils, we'll start putting in stranger-shaped fish.
One of the very first fish they imaged came with a surprise, an entire intact fish in its belly.
So we're actually getting a multiple image here of two different fish, one that's been eaten by the other one.
And it is this sort of in-situ studying of fish insides that excites Hastings. You can see just how the stomach sits in relation to the liver and the heart and all the other organs. And you can compare them from fish to fish, getting a better appreciation of the ocean's diversity and maybe even helping to refine theories as to how fish evolved.
So that's actually one area that I'm particularly excited about, this project, that it will open up a whole new data set for analyses of relationships of fishes.
This area of research is so wide open, Hastings says, that he expects even high school students will be able to make scientific discoveries that will benefit all fish kind.
To see the beta version of their site, visit digitalfishlibrary.org. And to find World Ocean Day activities still going on in your area, go to www.worldoceanday.org. Finally, remember to visit our website at www.scienceupdate.com. You can submit your science questions there, and if we use them in the podcast, you'll win a Science Update mug. You can also call us at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT. Next week, we'll learn how stress during pregnancy can be good and learn about a surprise connection between coffee and llamas. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirsch for AAAS, the Science Society.